Now, it's sometimes difficult to resist the siren song of a restaurant, especially if you're feeling too tired to cook. But fear not, our next guest is here to make a case that dining in can be just as fulfilling and perhaps more rewarding than dining out.
And we've issued a little bit of a challenge to our guest today, making beans, lentils, and other sometimes ho-hum pulses a little more exciting for the at-home cook.
Allison Roman joins us now. She's the author of Dining In. Allison, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, before we get into particular recipes, make the case for dining in and cooking, therefore, more than we do.
Well, you know, I think that we have sort of fetishized what it means to eat at a restaurant, and it's this fun, entertaining experience, and we spend a lot of our money and a lot of our time at restaurants. But, you know, I think that if you cook at home for yourself or for your friends or whomever, I think that you'll find with the right recipes and the right guidance that it can be just as satisfying and entertaining and fun and obviously delicious as a restaurant.
Now, how can we make dining in a little bit more of a treat? We're talking about how, you know, it's hard to resist the siren song. So I guess how do you make it a little bit more exciting for people?
I think that you have to just approach it from, you know, a perspective of A, willing to try new things, and B, just, you know, even if it's a Tuesday, kind of treating it a little bit more special. And that doesn't mean you have to take more time or spend more money or, you know, go totally crazy and go to 18 different grocery stores. And, you know, it doesn't have to be elaborate to feel a little bit special. And, you know, I think that whether that's trying something new, whether it's an ingredient or a technique, just something above the average, you know, okay, I'm just going to make the same pasta or the same chicken that I always do.
And you don't consider yourself, you're right, that you're not a lazy cook. You use the term lo-fi.
Lo-fi.
What do you mean by that?
Yeah. You know, I mean, lazy has a negative connotation.
I'm okay with it.
Yeah. I mean, let's be honest. I'm a little bit of a lazy cook, but I use lo-fi as, you know, in terms of just feeling like I don't love a ton of equipment. I don't have a ton of fancy tools. I'm not trying to use the latest and greatest in, you know, appliances. I don't have a million different spices and every ingredient under the sun. You know, I'm pretty basic when it comes to what I like to cook with and how I like to cook it. And so I think that, you know, once you understand that and can accept that about yourself, which I have, it took me many years, but, you know, it doesn't have to mean that's boring. It doesn't have to mean that that is not exciting to you. You know, I think it's about how you treat those ingredients and what you do with them, but it's not about what you're working with necessarily.
So for maybe some of our audience that might consider themselves either in the lazy or maybe want to adopt the lo-fi cook category, you know, what advice would you have for some of these cooks who want to be a little bit more adventurous without, you know, maybe making that 18 grocery store run?
Totally. Yeah. I mean, if you read through a lot of the recipes, I think you'll find first, you know, oh, most of them are 8 to 12 ingredients, which means you're not going crazy with the amount of things that you're buying for this dinner, half of which I'm sure you already have on hand. And it's really about, you know, changing up one or two things in that recipe to make it a little bit special. So there's, you know, the dish that's on the cover is this seared chicken thighs. And you can use any cut of chicken you want. And, you know, that's the other thing is I want people to feel like they can adapt it to what their preferences are and what they have access to. But instead of just adding onions to the skillet at the end, you kind of pickle the onions first in lime juice and then you add them to the skillet. And it completely changes the dish and makes it something a lot more exciting with just one extra step that's, you know, covering onions and lime juice, which takes 2 seconds. So it's the little things.
We're talking to Allison Roman. Her cookbook is Dining In. And Allison, you cover a lot of ground. We wanted to narrow it down a little here. And we went for beans and lentils, I think in part because, you know, we're in the middle of winter here in Wisconsin. Lentils out of a bag or can or beans out of a bag or can taste the same in February as they do in August. They're kind of always in season. And one good example, I think, of lo-fi cooking, sometimes you'll hear from people like, oh, no, only use dried beans and you soak them overnight and blah, blah, blah. You're fine with canned beans if we're in a hurry. No problem.
Of course I am. Even sometimes when I'm not in a hurry, I think that the consistency of them in the same way that a canned tomato will give you a different product than a fresh tomato. And they're both great and they have their different times and places. But, you know, I love cooking beans on a Sunday when I have nothing going on and I'm home or I'm working and, you know, I'm feeling lazy and I have the luxury of time. It smells amazing. It's a great way to spend your afternoon. But more often than not, that is not where I'm at time-wise. So a can of beans is delicious. And, you know, most of them, you know, once you find a brand that you like and trust, which is to say that it doesn't have too much salt or, you know, they don't, you know, whatever that part is for you, the texture of the bean is important. you know, it tastes the same every time, and it's going to be consistent, and it's going to be delicious.
And do you think that consistency might, you know, fall into or might push it along that, you know, beans and lentils don't always have the greatest reputation? They're not always the most exciting of the dish, but I mean, they're delicious.
The word lentil, the word bean, just inherently is the least exciting word I could possibly come up with. But that's the thing, you know, you take a can of beans, again, can of bean, not a great phrase, not super exciting, but you sizzle it in some garlicky olive oil with some chili flake, and you finish it with, you know, anchovies or some lemon and fresh herbs, and it's awesome. And honestly, it tastes like you've been cooking them all day.
I've made lentils in my life that do not look good, I'll say. They are, you know, they are what people, I think, picture a hippie lentil dish to look like.
Totally. I lived in Santa Cruz for a time, and I know all about that, but... You know, I think that lentils are the kind of thing where each lentil is so different that you kind of have to experiment and say, okay, these are the lentils that take forever to cook. These are the lentils that cook in 5 minutes. This is a lentil that's better for soup and stews, and these are better for a grain salad. You know, there's so many different types, and they're really not all created equal.
And you gave us a few recipes, and I want to start with the lentil one. We have this at WPR.org/Food Friday, by the way. Spiced black lentil salad with oil-packed tuna, radishes, and purple potatoes. Just the visual, not even looking at the picture, you see this is going to look good. Tell us about this recipe.
Well, it's basically a version of a, you know, classic tuna niçoise salad, but it's served over these lentils that I kind of keep in my fridge as a base for most things. And I eat them plain and I eat them in a salad like this. But essentially what it is a black lentil, which, you know, beluga lentil, also known as, and they're really firm. And so they don't turn to mush when you cook them. So they're a lot more grain-like than, say, a lentil that you would find in like an Indian dal. Like they don't disintegrate, they don't turn to mush, they hold their shape really nicely. So you cook the lentils almost just like pasta. You boil them until they're tender, drain them, and then I make an oil with, you know, I sizzle some lemon peel and spring onions and seeds like fennel and cumin and coriander and garlic, and then I pour it over the lentils. So you have this kind of already dressed delicious lentil dish, right? And like I said, I eat it happily out of the container from the refrigerator all the time, but it's also really beautiful as the base of a salad, as if you're making a grain salad. And my favorite way to do that is with some oil-packed tuna, which I think is superior to the water-packed variety. And then, you know, in the springtime, that's when this dish sort of came about, which you have a bunch of beautiful radishes of different colors and shapes and potatoes. And, you know, if you can find purple potatoes, great. Most Whole Foods carry them at this point. But regular old potatoes will work as well. And then you top it with a bunch of fresh herbs, maybe some green beans, lots of lemon, and it's this really satisfying, vibrant, delicious dish. And it's something that actually you can make in the wintertime because most of those things are around year-round.
What was interesting, I was looking at the book, going through it before the interview today, and, you know, this is, as you said, a niçoise salad, which I think for some people might be a little intimidating if they've seen it in a restaurant or something, but the way it's put together is really simple. So do you think it's for some of these lo-fi cooks who might be interested in these recipes that they seem more daunting than they actually are?
Right, and that's the thing, and again, I want to give cooks that are reading the book the freedom to say, I don't have purple potatoes, I'm going to use regular potatoes, or I don't have green beans, I'm going to only use radishes, or I'm going to use some sliced fennel instead, or I'm going to add eggs to it, or I don't want eggs in this. You know, I want them to kind of make it their own. And that's what's really exciting about following a recipe almost. You know, you use it as inspiration and as guidance, but, you know, you should have the freedom to make it your own depending on your taste and what you have. And I think that's really empowering to the home cook. You know, instead of saying, this is how you have to do something, I'm more saying this is how you can do something.
Allison Roman is with us. She's the author of Dining In. She's with us on this Food Friday to inspire us to try some new things in our cooking at home. And we're focusing on beans and lentils and making them an exciting part of our at-home cooking.
And you can join in by calling 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about beans and lentils? What are some of your favorite dishes to cook at home? And have you found any tricks to make dining at home a little bit more exciting? You can call in now at 800-642-1234. Again, that number is 800-642-1234. Or you can send a tweet to @CentralTimeWPR.
We'll pick up the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time.
Now, Allison, one of the other recipes we wanted to take a look at was your crispy chickpeas and lamb with greens and garlicky yogurt. How did you put those ingredients together to come up with this dish?
Well, that's sort of my back pocket, regular run-of-the-mill weeknight dinner. And sometimes I make it without meat, but just the idea of cooking chickpeas that way has always really, I've really been into it, because you take a chickpea out of the can and it's kind of slimy. It doesn't do much. You know, I think of the salad bar, you know, when it's just these raw chickpeas, they don't have much flavor. But if you toss them in oil, crisp them up in a skillet with some garlic, they are amazing and they completely transform. And I challenge anybody who thinks they don't like chickpeas to try the chickpeas this way, with or without the lamb. And, you know, the lamb is just a way to kind of get some added protein and make it feel a little bit more substantial. And it's, you know, bowls are very popular right now. People love grain bowls and salad bowls. And this is sort of my version of that. And so you have your grains and your meat, the chickpeas and the meat that you cook almost at the same time, and some spices and garlic. And then you serve it over garlicky yogurt. And then I add some Swiss chard and tomatoes if you have them. No worries if you don't. And to me, it's just the most satisfying, delicious, hearty meal that you can have. And I sort of change it up as the seasons go. Sometimes it's kale. Sometimes it's spinach. Sometimes I use fresh greens if those are around. I'm continuously satisfied by this, and it never gets old.
One thing that stood out to me, as I'm sure it probably will stand out to a lot of people, in the recipe, it does call for a fair amount of olive oil, about 6 tablespoons. Some people might be a little taken aback by that amount, but why do people, or why should people, use that much oil?
If you know, I tried to get around it, and I think I mentioned as much in the book, but you really can't get that crispiness from the chickpea. They really tend to absorb that oil. But, you know, 6 tablespoons for 4 people isn't that much, and it's significantly less than anything you would get in a restaurant, I assure you, having worked in one. I promise you this, and I know it can be a little scary to see that, but also olive oil is not the worst for you. And, you know, while most of the dishes in the book are pretty conservative with the oil, unless otherwise noted, you know, I think that for something to cook properly, I'm going to tell you how much oil you need. And it would be nice to say you only need 3 tablespoons, but that's not going to cut it.
Marie in Madison emails, I adore using crispy chickpeas. I use them in a Buddha bowl I make, often with kale, arugula, sweet potatoes, and lime juice. I use cumin, cinnamon, and paprika to season the chickpeas. That sounds like a pretty good combo.
That sounds delicious.
And I read about somebody who you just used to love eating chickpeas right out of the can growing up. That was you, right, Allison?
That was me, yeah, before my taste significantly refined. But yeah, I didn't quite mind the slimy texture when I was a small one, but now I only demand the crispiest chickpea.
You were saying a little bit earlier that this is your back pocket meal. How quickly does this come together?
You know, I'd say depending on what else you're serving it with, you know, the whole thing probably takes about 20 minutes.
Oh, so pretty
yeah.
fast.
You know, I mean, I sort of have a tendency to cook things a little bit higher and hotter than I see most home cooks doing, just because I know what it takes to actually burn something. And you have to cook something for you have to really, really want it to burn. But, you know, you stand over the skillet, you shake it occasionally, you make sure everything's getting kind of evenly browned and cooked. And cooking at medium high heat for this dish, especially, yeah, I think you're looking at around 20 minutes.
That recipe for crispy chickpeas and lamb with greens and garlicky yogurt, you can get through the Ideas Network Facebook page or at WPR.org/Food Friday. Just staying with chickpeas for a moment, another recipe in your book, I wouldn't have thought of this, baked eggs with crushed chickpeas and then chorizo and breadcrumbs, but the crushed chickpeas mixed in with eggs.
Yeah, so this is sort of the idea that, you know, chickpeas and grains and other legumes like that are actually amazing during the morning. And many countries serve you, you know, a version of like a lentil porridge or soup almost with those things. And I love the idea of baking eggs into it. And this is something that you don't have to use as breakfast. Oftentimes, you know, I've made this dish for dinner before, but the idea being that these crispy chickpeas that you kind of crush with the back of your spoon as you, you know, coat them in the chorizo, and they kind of just serve as like the loveliest little nest for your baked eggs. And unlike a shakshuka, which the eggs can sink into the tomato sauce and sometimes the eggs can cook unevenly, the eggs here really just kind of sit perfectly on top of the chickpeas. So they cook a little bit more evenly. The yolks stay a little bit more runny. And, you know, you can top them with a mess of herbs or greens and serve it with something creamy like yogurt if you like. I love chickpeas and yogurt. I know I'm not the only one, but they really are best friends. And, you know, it's super satisfying. It's one of those breakfasts that you could, you know, eat around 11 on a lazy Saturday and then not eat again for a few hours.
Yeah, that sounds really good. Now I'm sitting in here really, really hungry.
And look at the picture,
yeah,
too,
the picture is gorgeous. It does kind of look like a nice, like, really hefty shakshuka from where I'm sitting across the studio from Rob. But so we do have a little bit of a cheat recipe. It's not exactly beans, but it is green beans, blistered green beans with creamy tahini and fresh hot sauce. You know, tell us a little bit about that.
So I love green beans, but I hate an overcooked green bean. I want my beans in that context, like the fresh shelling bean. I'm thinking broad beans, Romano beans, your regular old green bean, haricot vert. I want them to be cooked super hot and super fast, right? I want the outside to be just tender, and I want them to still have that little bit of bite and crisp to them. They're just, I love them raw too, but cooking them briefly in a super hot skillet or grilling them just kind of takes the edge off. It makes them taste a little less green, you know? They're obviously green beans, but
yeah.
It takes away that rawness, but it still keeps their beautiful texture. And I love to eat them every which way, but this to me is one of the best because you have this creamy tahini sauce that you dip them in, and then chilies that you soak in a little vinegar and garlic and pour over, which sort of is like a hot sauce situation. And it's not quite as deep in flavor as it would be, you know, a Tabasco, something that's aged, but I like it because it's really just like this fiery vinegar sauce that is like this freshness that you can't get out of a bottle.
We're talking to Allison Roman. Her cookbook is Dining In. She's sharing some cooking inspiration, a little bit of focus on beans in our conversation here. We got an email from Deborah. Deborah emails, I spent the summer of 1989 in Maine, mostly living out of my 1980 Volkswagen Rabbit. One of my memorable meals was a can of B&M baked beans cooked over a small kerosene stove. They were awesome. Quite sure it wasn't just that I was hungry. They were above and beyond any baked beans in a can I had ever eaten. I think there must have been, it must have been something in the moment, too.
Oh, yeah.
Are you a fan of baked beans yourself, Allison?
You know, I am not. And only in that context, because there is a recipe in the book for what I think are the best baked beans. And I make a mention that there is no sugar, there's no ketchup, there's no molasses in my recipe. And maybe it's because I grew up in California. I don't know. Baked beans seem to be a very East Coast thing. Or maybe it's because I didn't grow up camping. I don't know. But I'm not the biggest fan of that. But I also tend to stay away from, you know, sweeter, savory foods in that way. So my baked beans have a lot of garlic and white wine and bacon and breadcrumbs and caramelized onions. Like, they're deeply, deeply savory.
We really quickly want to take a call from Ashley. Hi, Ashley.
Hello.
What was your question?
So I am making, Allison, your shortbread salted chocolate chunk cookies as we speak.
Wonderful.
And I was actually on your Instagram looking for some guidance and help because I'm trying not to panic right now as I make them. So I have a hand mixer and not a fan mixer. Uh-huh. And so when I was mixing the butter, I missed your helpful tip that if you have a hand mixer to make sure your butter's a little bit warmer. So I felt like I was mixing my butter for like 7 minutes or just a long time. And now I have all the flour and the chocolate in there. But it's really crumbly.
Yeah.
And I'm worried that I don't know, that I messed something up.
No. All right, Allison, talk Ashley down here.
No, Ashley, you're great. Your cookies are going to be great. I would just say kind of knead the dough a little bit with your hands. And not only will that soften the butter slightly with the warmth from your hands, but that's also going to make sure that your flour is all the way incorporated. And, you know, the thing with the hand mixer is that it really doesn't have the power of a stand mixer, which is why I recommend you do it for a little bit longer and use maybe slightly softer butter. But your dough is fine. The ratios, as long as all the ingredients are measured appropriately, there's nothing that you can't fix at this point. So as you are preparing to mold them into the logs, just kind of give them a little bit of a knead with your hands, and it should feel almost like Play-Doh. And if it feels dusty or floury, keep mixing. But if it just feels crumbly, that's okay, because it is a shortbread. It is a crumbly dough. I think if you'll see on my Instagram, there's a photo of the dough. It's pretty crumbly, and that's fine. So just force it into the log, kind of just like you're making a little thing out of Play-Doh. I don't know, like a house. I don't know what you make out of Play-Doh. It's been years. But, you know, you kind of can force the dough together at that stage as you're rolling it into the log, and then you should be good.
Glad we could help, Ashley. Allison, briefly, as we wrap up, what is on your menu this weekend, beans or otherwise?
Well, actually, tonight I'm going to a pizza party for the Olympics opening ceremony. So I'm not cooking, decidedly. And then the next day, I am getting ready for a dinner that I'm cooking on Sunday at a great restaurant here in New York called Cafe Altro Paradiso. And we'll be cooking some dishes from the book, which are great. We're doing this really great fish with preserved lemon relish, the steak with buttered radish toast, and a few other awesome surprises.
Sounds great. Allison, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Allison Roman. She's the author of Dining In. She joined us to talk about the joys of opting to dine in instead of out. And she talked about some of the best ways to make beans and lentils a little more exciting. We've got three of her recipes at WPR.org/Food Friday. You inspired?
Oh, absolutely. I am actually really excited. I love lentils already, but this kind of ups the game a little bit more.
I've been doing a lot of lentil soups. I've tried like crispy chickpeas before. Mine didn't turn out that great, but now maybe with some of her recipes, I'll give it another go.
I think
go.
You just have to up the oil. That's probably the biggest takeaway.
All right. Check out those recipes again on the Ideas Network Facebook page or WPR.org/Food Friday.